And welcome to episode 348 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abul Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from CarBuzz.
And this week, Robbie and his wife are celebrating their 18th anniversary with a little vacation in Japan. Aww. So I think today they are on their way from Tokyo to Kyoto, or at least that's the last images I saw on Instagram this morning. So we have a special guest joining us this week, Miss Jill Simonillo. Welcome, Jill.
Hello.
And for those in the audience that don't know who you are or may not have seen some of your work,
could that possibly be?
Well, I know. I mean, we reference you on a regular basis on the show.
Do. You know, in good ways. We promise. It's always good things, Jill.
Yeah. So, but tell us who are you, Jill?
Who am I? So I'm the managing editor for Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, website and YouTube channel. And then I'm a contributing editor for Consumer Guide Automotive. Let me see if I can get that out. Consumer Guide Automotive. And I have a couple of podcasts. I do a Car Stuff podcast with Consumer Guide Automotive and then the Truck Talk podcast with Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. So plus YouTube, for my own TikTok, Instagram, all the things. I do all the social things, so you can find me in all the places.
So Jill, if you could try to do a little bit more, it sounds like you have a lot of spare time in your day. So if you could, you know, work a little harder, that'd be cool. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've decided maybe I'll start training for a half marathon. So I figure, you know.
and you know, are you going to be doing the Rebel Rally again this year?
I am.
Excellent. Are you driving with Kristen again this year?
I am. So, so this will be the third year that we are competing. Kristen is our driver, Kristen Shaw, and I will be the navigator for the second year. And I've already started having nightmares about it.
Oh, no. So what's your biggest nightmare? What's the thing you're most freaked out about? Like the thing that you're like, oh, gosh, this wakes me up at night. This could happen.
Well, I mean, I don't think this could happen, but the most recent nightmare I had was that Kristen had to drop out at the last minute.
Oh.
And so they partnered me with somebody that I didn't know. And we were at a black checkpoint. So for those who aren't familiar with Rebel, that means it's a checkpoint that doesn't have like a flag or a marker. And you just have to say, I think it's right here. And so we're at a black checkpoint. We click on the tracker and we go back to our car and somebody stole it. Oh.
Probably not gonna. I mean, it could, I guess, but probably unlikely.
Hopefully unlikely. Yeah, my new driver forgot the keys in the car and somebody stole it. So that and I'm like, what do you even do? You don't have a cell phone, you know, you don't have any way to contact anybody. It's not like you memorize somebody's number. So if you could get your hand on a cell phone, you could be like, yeah, I'm gonna call Emily Miller, you know, the founder of Rebel Rally. No, you're literally stuck in the middle of nowhere with nothing.
I will cross my fingers and hope that nobody just sneaks up on you in the middle of nowhere in the desert and steals your vehicle because your unknown co-driver has left the keys in it.
Yeah, fingers crossed that will not happen.
Fortunately, since you're, you know, out in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere, chances of somebody just wandering by and saying, oh, look, there's a truck with keys still in it. I'm going to drive off with this.
Right.
Probably pretty slim,
but
you're safe. That's like the dream of like those weird dreams where you dream like you're giving a speech or something and you realize you forgot to put your clothes on or something like that. Dreams that will not ever really happen that turn into these ridiculous nightmares.
Yeah. But I like literally woke up and I was like, what would you do? Like, seriously, what would you do in that situation?
What would you do? I feel like you would have to stand there until hopefully you were close enough to the black checkpoint that somebody else for the rally would wander along. You'd be like, hey, could you give me an assist?
We have a problem.
A little challenge. Could you let somebody know this is where we are?
Yeah. Well, I posted it. There's an informal Rebel Rally like prep group, Facebook group. And so I posted my dream in there and somebody's like, funny, not funny. Like that would be
like hilarious, but utterly horrifying. Thank you for the additional thing to worry about.
Yeah, exactly. That would be true.
I suspect you're probably not the first to have a similar type of dream and probably won't be the last.
Yeah. You know, I mean, last year I would have nightmares about, because as the navigator, you are in charge of making sure you don't get lost. And so I would have nightmares about like losing my ruler or losing the map or because again, like this is, they've taken your phone away. You don't have like any kind of a Google to back you up. the GPS is out of your vehicle. So it's like, if you lose your map, you were literally SOL. So yeah, last year I had a lot of those dreams.
And it's funny because the idea of like, so when you say that, like losing your map, I think the average human's like, well, just whatever. No, that's all you have. Like you have absolutely nothing. You lost your map. It's like, well, this is where I died. Like you have no idea where you're going now.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, with that, why don't we dive into what we've been driving? Let's start with you, Jill. What have you been driving recently?
So a few vehicles, and you know, I mean, not, this isn't the most recent vehicle that I've driven, but it's the vehicle that I kind of want to talk about because to me, it was one of the most surprising vehicles that I've driven recently, and that was the 2024 Nissan Versa. $22,000 SR trim, and I was really impressed by it. Like, it's a basic car, but it had it had Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. It had heated seats. It had, you know, just some really nice materials for the seats. It was, you know, it's a petite car, so it's easy to maneuver in city situations, which I live in Chicago. And it had like automatic reverse braking, backup camera. It just like, it had so much technology. And when you think about the average transaction car of a vehicle these days being about $48,000, like I'm like $22,000.
Right. The average transaction price completely floors me. And I know that, but every time I hear it, I'm like, that seems absurd that that's the average. That's the average. That's stupidly high.
Yeah. I mean, because that means there's a lot of people out there spending $100,000 on a car.
Exactly. Exactly. That's like most people, like that's your average. You got a lot of people way up above that, which is scary.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I was really impressed with that car and everybody's like, seriously, Nissan Versa. And I'm like, seriously, Nissan Versa. So you know, somebody once told me if you stop getting excited about like the Toyota Camrys of the world to review, you should quit your job. And so like I did a video review of this car and I was like, I'm glad today is not that day. I'm excited about the Nissan Versa.
Yeah. I mean, I had a Versa a little more than a year ago. It's also an SR. In fact, for all we know, it might've been the same one. But yeah, I mean, I was really, totally agree with you. I was shocked at, you know, for basic transportation, it is a really solid car. You know, it's not super fast, you know, I mean, but it's got enough get up and go to merge on the highway. It's got the features that you would actually really need and want, and for somebody that wants to buy, you know, their first new car, you know, wants something with a warranty, that's going to be fairly reliable and, you know, isn't going to leave them stranded. And best of all, it comes with a spare tire in the trunk, which proved to be extremely valuable when I had it because driving to a meeting, hit a pothole, hear the pop, and you know, had to pull over and put the donut on, and I'm just glad it was there. You know, wasn't late for the meeting or anything, so it worked out perfectly. But yeah, I mean, it's a really, really nice little car to drive, and actually not that little. I mean, you know, I'm somewhat taller than you are, Jill. But you know, with the seat set, you know, for my driving position, I could comfortably sit in the back seat behind myself. You know, I'm like 5'11", 5'10", 5'11", depending on the time of day. And I could easily sit behind myself. So, you know, you can have four adults in this thing, you know, and have them not feel like they're squeezed in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I just like, I was so impressed. And like the trunk space is good. You know, it's got a really wide opening trunk. I may have sat in the trunk during my video. But it just, I don't know. I mean, I just can't get over it. And Nissan Kicks, I kind of have the same feelings about, which is their compact SUV that is also, you know, really cost efficient. I feel like Nissan has been knocking it out of the park with some of their lower end vehicles lately. And I just really wish more automakers would follow that trend because, you know, there isn't a day that passes that I don't get a comment on social media. You know, this is too expensive. I can't afford this. Normal people can't afford this car. And so, you know, when people ask me for like an affordable vehicle that isn't going to break the bank, I'm like Nissan Versa, Nissan Kicks. You know, I've also recommended the new Chevrolet Trax. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of my favorite vehicles.
I love the Trax.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what you're saying about affordable cars is very true, that people, they're sort of like the unsung heroes. I can say it because they're not fancy. They don't have these unbelievable, you know, responsive powertrains. You're like, oh, this is the best car in the world. But they get the job done. They're efficient. They're comfortable. They have the features you need. They have what you need. They don't have all this extra stuff. And there's a huge market. If you're just out of college and you need a car, or if you're on a budget and you need a car, or you want a commuter vehicle that you just want it to be to do the job. You don't need it to haul stuff. You don't need it to have the whole family. You don't care about fancy leather seats and all this stuff. Cars like the Versa are awesome. I like the Versa. I've liked it for, I've said the same thing the last time I drove it. I'm like, you know what? This is a great first car. This is a great affordable option. And people need those. They're important.
And if you're, if you're a parent, you know, looking to buy a car for your teenager, you know, that got their driver's license and, you know, need something to drive to work, to school, whatever. And you want to get them something that is going to be relatively safe and efficient and, you know, cost effective. You know, Versa is a great choice. In fact, if the $22,000 for the Versa, for the SR, which is the fancy version of the Versa, is a little too rich for your blood. I'm just looking. You can actually still get for 2024. You can get the base Versa S with a 5-speed manual transmission at under $17,000. And even with an automatic, it's just over $18,000.
That's crazy cheap. Like, that is for a brand new car, because it's not just, oh, well, you're spending more than you would in a used car. Yes, you are. But also, it's brand new, which means all the warranties that come with a brand new car come with that car. So the added benefit to that is, if you're trying, you're on a budget because you're buying this kind of car, right? You don't want to blow everything on your car. Well, if you have a used car that doesn't come with any kind of warranty or the same extensive warranties, when problems happen, you're on the hook for that, which is almost worse than having a car payment. You know, you have to budget out X number of dollars a month. It's like, oh, guess what? You need to spend an extra $700 or $400 or $300 right now, or you don't have a car. With a car that's new and affordable to begin with, when that problem happens, it's covered. And that's a big deal. Like, I remember when we were in our 20s and have a car and something would go wrong and you think, oh my gosh, where am I coming up with $400 right now? I don't have it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, and I will say, one of the comments that I did get on social media a lot was about the CVT. And they're like, it's so unreliable and it's so horrible and Nissan CVTs. And I was like, okay, that's so 2013. You know, there were problems with the CVTs. And Sam, maybe you can speak to this a little bit more. But, you know, I know Nissan extended the warranties on the CVT, and they made a recommendation to change the transmission fluid a little bit, you know, more regularly and sooner. And I've then, on the flip side, heard from people who've done those things who are like, nope, I haven't had a problem with it. But I feel like there's a lot of misinformation out there about the Nissan CVT that used to be true, that's just not true anymore.
Yeah, I think, you know, in recent years, you know, I haven't heard any major issues with the CVTs in like the last 7 to 10 years. So I think, you know, I think you could get one of these and not worry about it. You know, just do the recommended maintenance, you know, which is not particularly onerous on modern cars, and you'll be good, you know, and just, you know, take care of it and it'll take care of you.
Yeah. And excellent. I think sometimes when people complain about, you hear people complaining about CVTs, aside from just a reliability standpoint that you're mentioning, Jill, but just like, oh, it's horrible, it's awful, it's miserable, you don't want to drive a CVT. Okay, you know what? Let's realistically, most people, if you get into a car, you're not going to immediately know, unless you're one of us, whether you're in a CVT or not. Like, you're just, you might notice noise or not notice noise. You might notice it smoother or not smoother, but it's not like, oh God, clearly this car has a CVT. Like, just back off. It's okay. You can drive one and they're fine.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Nicole, what about you? What have you been in?
I have the exact opposite of Jill's vehicle in probably every conceivable way. It is neither affordable nor easy to get around or anything that a new person to driving would buy. I had.
But can Jill fit in the trunk?
2,000 Jills could fit in the trunk of this. Yes. I have the Chevy Suburban High Country.
Oh, wow.
You could probably put the Versa in the back of the Suburban. I feel like you might.
I think you probably could do that.
Push it right back there. So the thing that is, like, was thinking about these cars. So this is a very specific use case scenario. And much like you're saying, the Versa's targeting a very specific person, and people will complain, oh, it's not all these great things. So is the Suburban. It's not all these, oh, it's too big, it's too this. But the person who buys this probably wants to tow something, or probably has a lot of cargo with them, or has a big family, or has a need. You don't just go, I'm going to buy a Suburban just for kicks. That's not how this works. So it's again, one of those situations where there is a use case for this vehicle. And if you are that use case, it works beautifully. The High Country is the most expensive version of this that you can get. It starts at about $82,000. The one I had was about $92,000. So it's not cheap. That's how your average price comes up. This is the car that helps you do that. Yours brings it down. Mine brings it up. But I like this overall. The things that I don't like about it are because it's not made for me. It's too big for me. I don't like having to take a car this large and try to put it in the parking lot in our local grocery store, much less take it into the city. In fact, we spent all day yesterday in Boston and I said, we're not taking the press car. I'm not taking this into Boston, trying to find a parking garage that's big enough that I don't like completely take out the side of the car, trying to find a spot. So it's not a great choice if you're in a big city. Although I did see someone in one when we were crossing, we were like at a crosswalk and I'm like, I'm looking at this giant behemoth trying to go. I'm like, yeah, I made the right call. This in here. It was like, that looks uncomfortable. Overall, I mean, it's great for what it does. This one had the diesel, which is 277 horsepower, 460 pound feet of torque. So if you're doing a lot of towing, diesel engines make that easier, make it better. So if you're someone who's towing a trailer, and again, that's the guy who's buying this, that's the person who's going to buy this one. Inside, because it's the High Country, it's beautiful. It's got leather trims. It's got all the bells and whistles. It's comfortable. The Suburban will seat up to 8. This has standard captain's chairs, so it's 7. But the captain's chairs, I honestly like them unless you need that 8 all the time. I like captain's chairs in a vehicle because A, it keeps your kids separated, so they're less likely to bicker. But also, with the minute you put a grown-up back there, it feels like they're still sitting in the same kind of seat you have up front. So it's very comfortable. And adults or even like tweens, teens, anybody out of a car seat is going to think that the captain's chairs are a way better choice. So I do like that. And it has a ridiculous amount of cargo room. If you fold all the seats down, it's 144.7 cubic feet of cargo room.
Yeah, that's like 20.
That's about a foot, one cubic foot short of what you'd need to haul the Versa in.
It's so close. So that is who this vehicle is made for. You have lots of cargo, you have lots of people, and you tow. That's when you're going to buy this vehicle. And if that's what you want and you can afford this price tag, then go for it. Now, you can always, like, you don't have to get the High Country. You can knock some off of that if you're a little bit more reasonable. You can get it in, like, I think it starts the low 60s, mid 60s roughly is where it starts. So you can get it a lot cheaper than that if you want, if you don't care about all the bells and whistles. So even then, you have a car, I'm driving it at a starting price of 82, but if you can get into it like 62, that's still a lot. But for all of this, for that huge vehicle that has all the things that you could want to do if you're someone with cargo and lots of people, I'm a fan of this. I don't like parking it, but I'm a fan of it.
the rear wheel drive LS starts at $61,195.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, it's expensive. It is not going to be a cheap vehicle no matter what, but chances are pretty good if you're buying this. You're someone who needs this kind of, like, you can get cheaper vehicles to tow. You can get cheaper vehicles for a family, but you probably have a family. You're not probably 22 years old and have 3 kids. It could happen, but it's probably not likely. So you're likely a family and you likely have a reason. You've got something. So you've had some time to figure out what you need, what you want. And I feel like for the person who has that, this is the kind of car to go. This is the thing to get. This is a perfect vehicle. It's not outrageous. It is reasonable for what it is in terms of pricing.
Yeah. I mean, if you need to, you know, haul 8 people and a horse trailer, you know, or a big boat to the lake.
Right.
Yeah. You know, this is your vehicle.
And if that's covered. Right. If you're just like just out of college and the most you're doing is carrying your duffel bag, your bookshelf and your futon to your next apartment, this is probably a little much.
Yeah. Then you get the Versa.
Then you get the Versa. So I like it. I like the Suburban.
Yeah, I had a friend in Chicago. She lives in the northern suburbs. They had a Suburban, and they have no kids. But the reason that they had a Suburban is because they have 2 old English sheepdogs. Very, very large.
That's kind
dogs.
Of equivalent to about 4 kids.
Yeah. I mean, they weigh like 135 pounds. So that's more than I weigh. But they would put them in the back And then they would make the drive down to Florida, and they would want that for their, you know, drive down to Florida car for the dogs and then all of their luggage and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So, I mean, they very purposely bought the car for that specific reason.
Well, I know people who've done the same thing when you're talking about dogs. I have a friend who has Newfoundlands, which are also mm-hmm. giant dogs, and she shows them. So she does the same kind of thing where they need to drive them long distances. So she actually has, I think she may have had a Pacifica, but she always has either a minivan or a large SUV because she wants to have room to put him back there, but also have all the stuff and her husband to go to these various shows that they do around the country. So again, there's a purpose for vehicles like this. That's one of the purposes for that. Works beautifully.
My dogs, on the other hand, are quite content in my Miata.
Your little doggos are so cute. Whenever they pop up randomly, like when I'm in my Instagram, I'm like, oh, Sam's walking the dog. Look at Daisy. Look at her go.
All right. Anything else on the Suburban?
I will echo Nicole's sentiment about being stressed out about having a vehicle like that in the city. Because, you know, I live in Chicago, and I think you guys have mentioned it on the show before, but I love to play the Will It Fit game of Will It Fit in My Garage?
Will it fit?
And the Suburban will not fit. I will firmly say that it does not fit. It is the size of a full-size pickup truck. And so that means that when I have a vehicle of that size, like I have to park it on the street in Chicago. And I don't live like in city center, but I'm in the neighborhoods. And I do get a little bit stressed out parking a test car on the street, even though it's like right in front of my apartment. Like it stresses me out. And then, you know, similar when John and I, my husband and I, when we're going out to dinner, I'll be like, yeah, so we're not taking the test car this week. We will be taking our GTI. So we have a little compact GTI. And I'm just like, yeah, that is going to be the appropriate car to drive into, you know, downtown to have dinner.
Unless you're planning to valet park it, you know, in which case you let somebody else worry about parking.
Nope. Even then, like, I do not trust a valet to touch a vehicle of that size.
I can't tell you, I had some huge, I think I had like a Super Duty pickup truck once, and I had to go to the mall and I at the holidays and stupidly drove that instead of my own car. And it was kind of as I was getting to the mall, I thought, you've made a horrible mistake. I went to the valet because this mall had valet parking. And I was like, here's where I figure out I'm not doing this. I handed the keys. He's like, just pull it up ahead a little bit and I'll take it. Okay. I came out 3 hours later. It's still parked there. That's where valet parked. He must have looked at it and been like, I'm not doing this either. So it kind of was brilliant because I literally walked out the door of the mall, took the keys off to my car and drove away. But even the valet is like, I'm not doing that, lady.
Yeah. I went back in about 2008 or 2009. I was working at a place. Our office was in downtown Ann Arbor, and we had some spaces in a parking garage across the street. And Ford delivered me an F-450 dually.
Oh, geez.
And I looked at this thing, you know, and I knew that, you know, that the going into the parking garage, it was going to be too wide to fit through the curbs there to get into the parking space. It sat there most of the week. You know, I could not even drive it to the office. It was crazy.
Yeah. So. See, get the right car for the right use case. That's important
yep.
stuff.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. Well, I had something kind of in between those two, which is kind of SUV-ish, but also from the Nissan Motor Group. I had the Infiniti QX55 Sensory All-Wheel Drive, which is the smallest of Infiniti's current crossovers. It's based on the QX50, but with a fastback roofline. So it is basically the QX50, but with a little bit less headroom in the rear and a little less cargo space. It comes standard only with Infiniti Nissan's 2-liter variable compression turbo, which is it's a fine engine. It's not exceptional. It's technically very interesting. As an engineer, I'm fascinated by the way this thing works. The goal when they designed this thing was to have an engine that produced comparable performance to the V6 that they had previously been using and still use in a lot of their vehicles, but with the fuel efficiency of a 4-cylinder engine. I'm not entirely sure that they achieved either of those. It's kind of a jack of all trades and master of none. 2-liter turbo, 268 horsepower, which is good for a 2-liter turbo. Most 2-liter turbos are somewhere around 250, 260 horsepower. Some are a little bit more, about 280 foot-pounds of torque. There's this complex mechanism in the bottom end of the engine that changes the compression ratio to try and make it more efficient sometimes and to give you more power and torque when you need it. One thing about driving this engine is you generally will never realize that it's doing any of this fancy stuff. All you've got all these mechanisms going on in the engine. It just kind of works, which is good. That's what you want. It should be seamless. You shouldn't notice it transitioning between any of these modes. It ranges the compression ratio from 8 to 1 to 14 to 1. So it's a pretty wide range. Like I said, it's not especially powerful and not especially fuel efficient. The fuel economy rating on this thing is 25 miles per gallon combined, 22 city, 28 highway. I averaged about 24, which is okay. But that was mostly highway driving. So it's kind of low, compared to the label value. Aside from that, I would recommend, if you want it to feel a little more lively, switch it from tour mode or normal mode, whatever. I think it's tour mode, to sport mode, because otherwise in its normal state or in the eco mode, when you're, for example, accelerating to merge onto a highway, it can feel slightly sluggish sometimes. It's like there's some turbo. It almost feels like old school turbo lag, where it's like not much is happening, and then all of a sudden, you feel the power coming on, and that can be a little disconcerting at sometimes, especially if you're trying to merge into a busy highway.
So this is one of those vehicles, because sometimes I feel like you use sport mode and you have to be like searching to feel the difference. You feel the difference in this one.
Oh yeah, you'll definitely feel the difference. It becomes much more responsive. So all of that fancy hardware, reacts a lot faster when you put it in sport mode. So clearly they're tuning it, in the normal mode to try to get more efficiency. So you lose some responsiveness, but it's not really that much more efficient. So it's kind of a trade-off that I'm not sure is worthwhile. But that said, it's a really nice looking vehicle. The one I had was in this, I think they call it Arctic white, kind of a pearlescent white that looks really, really nice for a white. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of white cars, but it looks nice.
Why don't you like white cars? What do white cars ever do to you?
They're boring.
And they get dirty quick.
Yes.
I was curious. That's why I never get them, because in white cars, but black cars look horrible in the winter. So what do you do? Be like,
that's true.
On the road makes your black car look like a white car.
But, I'm not particularly fond of black cars either. I like colors. I like a red or a blue or even a yellow, something more interesting. Huh?
What color's your Miata?
It's silver, but that's actually going
to
fade.
I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
No, because it's actually white. The guy I bought it from, Had it wrapped, and it's a vinyl wrap. It's silver. I'm probably actually going to get the wrap replaced in the next year or so.
Go
with something. I'm going to see if I can find something like the Mariner blue that they had on the first year Miatas.
Okay. That's a pretty color. Okay.
Yeah, or some kind of shade of blue, I think.
All right. I'm going to expect in 1 year, I'm going to be like, yeah. It's the year, Sam. We made that more exciting.
But, you know, overall, driving the QX55, you know, is generally a very pleasant experience, other than what I just complained about with the engine responsiveness in the normal mode. The one thing about this, you know, the interior, while overall the interior is really nice, it still has the old school Infiniti infotainment system.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Jill, like, doing the
Jill's giving
the
choking herself.
We're both still choking herself. I'm making the face. We're like, oh, you.
It's two touch screens stacked one above the other that, the top one, you know, is it's a weird design. The top one is flush mounted in the center stack, and it's a glossy finish on it. The one below is sort of embedded a little bit, sunken into the center stack, and it's more of a matte finish on it. The top one is where all your infotainment stuff shows up. Various ancillary controls show up on the lower one. It's not a great layout.
That's putting it kindly.
Yes. Yeah. The QX60, which is newer, and now the QX80 that they just launched in New York, you know, they've gone to an all new system with a single screen. It's a much better setup. This is probably the last of the vehicles that will get updated with a new infotainment system. It does have support for wireless CarPlay and Android Auto, so that works fine. The upper screen, which is where the infotainment stuff is, because of the way the center stack kind of slopes forward, it's also a little bit of a reach to tap the screen. There is also, it is a touch screen, but there's also a central control knob on the console that you can use. And I know Nicole doesn't like those. If you're going to use the touch screen, you might have to lean forward a little bit to actually hit the screen. That is kind of pretty major downside to driving this car. But, it's roomy, the back seat's roomy enough, for two adults and, three slimmer adults or, teenagers or kids. I like the overall design of it. And when they launched this thing a couple of years ago, they talked about, bringing back the style of the original Infiniti FX that launched in the late 90s or early 2000s. And, that was one of the first sort of coupe-like SUVs. Aside from the coupe-like profile on this thing, there's pretty much nothing else about this that reminds me of the FX. It's a pleasant enough vehicle to drive overall. And as equipped, the one I had was 62,773 dollars. It has a heads up display. It has the Nissan ProPilot Assist, which has never been a particularly useful system. It sort of tries to do some lane centering. On curves, it's a hands-on system. So you definitely don't want to mess around like in a Tesla, with taking your hands off the wheel. Just keep your hands on the wheel and steer, and it does a little bit of assisting for you. But it's not going to be able to keep the car in the lane on a curve, on a highway curve. It will drift out by itself if you don't keep your hands on the wheel. But other than that, that's the QX55.
I like that. Wasn't the QX55, did that come out in the middle of the pandemic? Was that the one they did the crazy deliveries for, if I'm remembering right? Did anybody get that?
I think so. Yeah. I think it came out in 2021.
So it must have, because I remember, and I feel like that was the vehicle that they had it shipped to us in a fancy trailer, and like there's music, and it was like, here it has arrived. We're all like,
I never got one in a trailer.
I know you were special.
It was a QX55. I hope I'm not remembering, but it was like early enough that the automakers weren't quite all comfortable doing different doing drive programs. Like, yeah. we want to get you all together, but we want to get you the car. And they were cycling through things like you got it for 3 days and then we're bringing the next guy who gets it for 3 days or 2 days sometimes. But they yeah. had a special trailer that they loaded up in and it was supposed to be, it was like they wanted to create a show. And I was like, I just, okay. All right. I don't know how that made, yay. Like it was a lot of effort. And they gave you, that was the other thing. They were trying to create an experience. And I'm pretty sure it was this car. It was definitely Infiniti. But they also like, we want you to feel like you have sort of, you have a wonderful car and you'd be going out for an amazing night with your best friend, spouse, husband, girlfriend, whatever. And they did a meal with the car. And this never happens when you get a loaner. They sent you food that you could either go pick up at your favorite place, or if you were someone who wasn't quite comfortable going out to get food at a restaurant just yet, they'd have it delivered. But literally they call like, pick your restaurant. So you picked your restaurant near you, pick what you want. It's like, really? And I ordered and they're like, no, get two. You have got a husband, right? Get. I'm like, really? You're just going to get. So it was to create, they were trying to create this experience without being able to do the normal thing, which was, we will take you to this place. We will show you the vehicle. We will talk about the vehicle. It was the most memorable car delivery experience I have ever had.
Yeah. Kia was doing that as well with when they launched the Sorento, which also came out during, I think in late 2020.
Okay.
They delivered the Sorento, to my house and, they said, they gave me, Uber Eats credit, and said, order a dinner for two, from whatever restaurant you want and we'll have it delivered for you. And so, that was quite pleasant.
It was such a fun way. I thought it was such a creative way during a time when it was like they had to really think of a different way to do stuff. They couldn't do any of the traditional launch stuff they did. And they're like, well, if we bring it to them in a fancy trailer and we give them dinner, then it feels like the special upscale experience they believe Infiniti should be. And I was like, okay, I can roll with this.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't remember getting the fancy trailer. I feel like when I drove the QX50, it was at the Texas Truck Rodeo.
Okay.
Or the Spring Roundup, they had it there. I like the way it looks, but that two-screen setup, like, I think that's a deal breaker for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, the two-screen, like, when they first started doing that, because infotainment has not really been around as long as you think. Like, there's people out there who've never, like, if their car is older, and it doesn't have to be ancient, might not have an infotainment screen in their car. They still got like a little radio thing. It's new. So having watched it gradually become a thing, the two screen thing for a little while, like for just the tiniest little bit in time, felt like, oh, no screens. Okay, this is the way we're going to do it. And everyone's like, no, no.
Yeah, I think they launched it on the Q50 in like 2015 or 16, this particular system. And it was kind of novel.
Right.
It was different from what anybody else was doing. It seemed kind of interesting at the time until you actually try to drive with it.
And it's just not, the two screen setup is just not, it doesn't work.
No, I mean, the only place I've seen a two screen setup work was in Land Rover, because they had their like Duo Touch, whatever, but it was like all on one seamless surface and the screens matched. And it made sense how they had it set up with like the HVAC and then the infotainment and then, but like that's the only instance I've seen like a two screen system
work. Yeah, they don't. I feel like it was a test thing. Like, let's see how this works. And the OEMs are like, oh no, it doesn't. Let's move on.
They kept using it anyway.
They did.
They introduced several more models with it.
No, but like, I feel like once they do, like, cause that's not a small commitment, right? Once you commit to that as a car company, this is how we're moving forward. You can't always undo it as quickly. It takes a little time. Like, there's things I would assume. These are in process. We know it's not working, but we can't un-engineer what we've just worked 2 years to get into the next iteration of this vehicle. We'll have to wait for the next one, and then we can pull this out because nobody likes it, including us.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to some of the stuff from the past week. Let's start with the Chevy Traverse. Let's see. Neither of you went to the drive because you were both in Europe cruising some rivers.
We were cruising rivers. We were on vacation, eating too much food. Yeah.
All right. Well, I will share my thoughts on the 2024 Chevy Traverse. They brought us down to Georgia for a couple of days. It was a fairly quick turnaround too. We flew in, one morning, spent the afternoon, got some presentations, spent the first afternoon driving the, Traverse, Z71, which is they've added the Z71 trim to the Traverse, or Z71 if you're Canadian or British, to the Traverse lineup for 2024. So the Traverse is largely all new. You know, it's based on the same basic architecture as the previous generation. So it's, you know, the same size, but almost all the parts. I think they said one of the only parts that's actually carried over for some reason is the roof panel on the version that doesn't have a sunroof. So that sheet metal is common to the 23 and the 24. but if you get it with the panoramic sunroof, then even that is different. The Traverse is Chevrolet's take on their upper midsize. You know, they call it a midsize, but I remember when the original Traverse came out in like 2009, at that time, the dimensions, it was actually about an inch and a half longer than a Chevy Tahoe.
Wow.
And even now, you know, the Traverse hasn't really grown in size. The current generation Tahoe got several inches longer. So it's now about 4 inches shorter than the Tahoe, but this is a pretty big, and compared to any other three row crossovers, you know, this is definitely the biggest in the segment. It is like several inches. It's about 4 or 5 inches longer than a Hyundai Palisade or Kia Telluride. It's a couple inches longer than a Ford Explorer. It's bigger than the Honda Pilot, the Highlander, Toyota Highlander. So it is the biggest in the segment, which means that it is quite roomy inside. You know, the third row seat is actually pretty usable for adults. As an adult, you may not want to ride, you know, from Chicago to Florida in the third row, but your kids will have no problem at all in the third row. But certainly going out to dinner or somewhere, you know, or shorter trips, riding in the third row, not an issue at all. It's got lots of cargo space inside. This generation, they've gradually been transitioning the design. You know, they referred to the first generation as kind of minivan like, which I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but it was definitely a little different. But each of the second and third generation now, they've gotten more truck SUV like, so a little more rugged looking, a little more squared off. I think this generation is a sharp looking vehicle. Quite attractive. If you want something that looks more like a traditional SUV, this is definitely moving in that direction. And especially if you get the Z71 trim, you know, like the off-roady trims that they're putting on, you know, all the others, like XRT, I think, that Hyundai has, and Trail Sport for Honda, and the Explorer Timberline. You know, this one looks more off-road ready. So with the Z71, you get 18-inch wheels with some all-terrain tires that actually have some sidewall. If you live someplace like Chicago or Detroit that has potholes,
even
if you don't go off-roading, you may want to choose this one anyway. So you have more likelihood of your tires surviving, you know, through more than one winter season. You get some extra traction with this. There's about an inch more ground clearance. The Z71 does actually get a couple of proper skid plates. There's one at the front that kind of goes underneath, like from the bumper, underneath the radiator area, and then another beefier one that goes underneath, that covers the entire area underneath the drivetrain, the front part of the drivetrain anyway. So you at least have some protection from rocks. This is not intended to compete with a Jeep. This is not going to compete with a Wrangler or any of the Jeep Trailhawk models. This is for light off-roading. They had a trail for us that was certainly more aggressive than the one that Hyundai did with the Palisade a couple of years ago.
Okay, that has now become the gold standard for a horrible off-road trail. That poor Hyundai Palisade. We all reference, everybody does. Well, it wasn't like that one Palisade drive. That was like the biggest mistake.
Which was literally like the smoothest dirt road I've ever driven on ever.
Like, if I can take a Camry on that, it is not really off-roading. I feel like I could have taken a Camry on that. It would have taken me a little time, could have done it.
Yeah,
and they took us to the Biltmore where the Land Rover like off-road school is. And I was like, yes, this is going to be so much fun. And I was like, oh.
So, you know, the trail we had, you know, actually had some rocks and stuff, you know, nothing too big, but, you know, enough to exercise this thing. And it did good. It did fine. One of the nice things they have on the Z71, you know, is they've got all the surround cameras and, you know, you can turn on the cameras and keep the cameras on, you know, up to about 20, 25 miles an hour. So if you're going down a, you know, a two-track trail to a cabin or something like that, you know, that's fairly narrow. You can keep the cameras on. You can see where the front wheels are. You can see all around you, so you don't, you know, try and avoid pinstriping the paint with the brush on the side of the trail. It was surprisingly capable. You know, and it was a relatively modestly challenging trail. You know, like I said, a Jeep would have no issue with it, but you know, for a vehicle like this, I was impressed. It did well. The Z71 also has a twin clutch rear axle, so that they can do torque vectoring on the rear axle. There's nothing like the trail control system that you get, or the trail turn assist system that you have on the Bronco and a couple of the other Fords now, where, you know, it'll lock up the inside rear wheel when you're going tight turns.
I think that trail turn assist is amazing. I like that.
But what it does have is they have the terrain mode on here. So there's an off-road mode, which, you know, changes the slip thresholds for the stability control and traction control and everything. But then there's the terrain mode, which when you engage that, it basically gives you one pedal driving. So it's like driving an EV with one pedal driving. So you don't have to go back, you know, when you're on a trail, you don't have to go back and forth between the gas and the brake. You can just modulate the accelerator pedal. And as you lift off, it'll automatically apply the brakes and slow you down. So you don't have trail control, which is kind of the off-road cruise control that some companies have. But you do have this really nice terrain mode. So it's very easy to control at low speeds and modulate your speed as you're navigating a trail. So that worked really well. I was really impressed with that. We did get a chance to drive the Z71 on road as well. And compared to the RS model, which is the top trim level, the RS has 22 inch wheels with lower profile tires. Those tires on the RS definitely have much better grip when cornering. You could feel when you're going around a corner, the all terrain tires, you could feel the difference, and they squirm a little bit more. Yeah. But it's not bad. I mean, it's fine. It's fine to drive. I mean, for most driving, it's going to be absolutely fine. You're not taking this thing to an autocross anyway. You know, for daily driving, it works great. But the interior on all of the new Traverses is way improved from previous generations. The infotainment setup is the same. It's the same screens, the same displays that you have in the Blazer EV, and also in the upper end Silverado EV. So you get the 17.7 inch infotainment screen in the center that's tilted slightly towards the driver, and then 11.5 inch instrument cluster display. They slightly overlap. It's an attractive looking design. You know, you can pull up various different arrangements for the instruments. The infotainment is the same Android Automotive system that GM's putting on all their newer vehicles. Unlike the EVs, this one still has support for CarPlay and Android Auto. So, you know, if you're an iPhone user, if you're an Android user, there's not really any good reason to connect your phone, because you can just use the Android apps, download your Android apps right on the system. But if you're an iPhone user and you want to use your apps on your iPhone, you can plug it in, use that just the way you always have. it all works, you know, it all works really well. You know, driving on the road in the RS the next morning was very impressive. The engine, they've gotten rid of the V6 engine that's been in the previous two generations of the Traverse. They've got a new 2.5 liter four cylinder, which shares some architecture with the 2.7 liter turbo that's in the trucks, but you know, not really any parts are shared because you know it's transverse mounted as opposed to longitudinal in the trucks. And 8-speed automatic transmission. So 328 horsepower and 326 pound-feet of torque. So it's got quite a bit more power and torque than the old V6. Very responsive. Had no complaints about the engine in this thing. It's, you know, the fuel economy rating, it's rated at, 20 combined for all-wheel drive, 17 city, 25 highway. We didn't, you know, during the time we had to drive, you know, we weren't really paying attention to fuel economy. When we get one of these for a longer review, you know, have a better idea of that. But you know, the fuel economy is not really any better than the previous generation. In fact, it's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It does feel more responsive. So it's a good engine. Quite impressed with that. I said roomy, the materials and fit and finish like other, you know, newer GM vehicles, you know, is getting a lot better. It feels a lot more premium. And let's see, find the pricing here. The front wheel drive, LS, starts at $41,000. That's including mm-hmm. delivery. So there's only four trim levels this year, LS, LT, Z71, and RS. LT is $43,395. The Z71 starts at $47,795, which is actually, you know, pretty reasonable compared to, you know, it's very competitively priced compared to things like the Pilot Trail Sport and, you know, other similar vehicles. And then the RS is another $10,000. It's $57,595, which is now you're getting into that high end. But with the RS, you get things like Super Cruise is included as standard. Mm-hmm. It's available on the Z71 and the LT. And you get 3 years of connectivity to support Super Cruise and all the other stuff before you actually have to start ponying up for something like OnStar if you want to keep using that. That is the 2024 Chevy Traverse. Oh, actually, just to clarify, the price I gave for the base price for the LS was for the all-wheel drive LS. The mm-hmm. front-wheel drive LS starts at $38,995, so $39,000.
Okay. That's not bad. Yeah. It's actually not bad at all.
And
so I have a question for you. Are you an Android user?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So you said that, and I'm an iPhone, mm-hmm. so like I am very unfamiliar with the Android thing. So you said that the Traverse gets the Android operating system, mm-hmm. and there was no point in connecting your phone that you can download the apps. What does that mean?
So that means that, you know, in the infotainment system, it's got it's running on Android and it's got Google Automotive Services built in. So that's got Google Assistant for voice recognition, Google Play Store. So the Google App Store is right in the vehicle. So if you have no phone at all, you can get into one of these vehicles. You can, as long as you have a Google account, if you don't have a Google account, you can sign up for one. You can tap on the Google Play Store and you can log into your Google account. And you can download apps like Spotify and YouTube Music and Pocket Casts and, you know, whatever else. There's a whole, you know, all kinds of Android apps that download, and they don't download onto your phone. They download right into the infotainment system in the car. So it's running the same Android apps that are running on your Android phone. And messaging apps and things like that are all right there on the screen. And you can control those. And if you have, if you use, it also has Google Maps for navigation. And if you use, the Google apps, if you're a Google Maps user, you know, any favorites, anything you've got starred in Google Maps on your phone or on your computer or any other anywhere else where Google Maps runs, all that stuff shows up right there once you log into your Google account. And so all, you know, all your contacts are there. It all shows up right in there without even connecting your phone.
But isn't that all like, subscription based? So like you'll get a free trial, but then after a certain amount of time, you won't be able to log in through the car. Like it would make more sense to connect your phone.
You get 3 years of connectivity included with the purchase. So for the first 3 years, you don't have to, you don't have to pay anything extra for a subscription. That's included with the purchase price of the car. And for the EVs, they're doing 8 years on the EVs, because they are not supporting smartphone projection on the EVs anymore. So for the first 3 years, you get to use the system for free on the gas vehicles, 8 years on the EVs. And then after that, if you want to use your phone in the gas vehicles, you can use that. Or, I mean, you can use your iPhone from day one with CarPlay. It works just fine. And you can use that for as long as the car exists. So you don't have to pay at least for the first 3 years.
Got it. Yeah. Now I'm going to have to like pay more attention to these Google operating systems and like log into like, usually in a vehicle, I try not to put too much personal information into it because in a week I'm turning it on to somebody else, but I've gotten a lot more curious about, like how a messaging app would work. Like, because I know it's different. My husband's an Android. I don't know how we got married, but he's an Android. And he doesn't use like the native messenger app on the Android phone. He has, I don't even know what he has, but he has something weird. So I'm assuming like you can
download WhatsApp. It's available to run on the car, and there's several other messaging apps. You know, there's the Google Messages, but Slack I think works on there. There's several others that also work right in the system.
Okay, yeah, because so then download that and then try and message through that. I don't know. I'm a very Apple centric person. I love Apple CarPlay. I'm very very distraught that they've taken it out of their EVs. But the Google operating system, Google Assistant, like is really good. I love having Google tell me jokes.
Yeah. And, one of the things, with the Google Maps, you can shift the map from the center screen over into the cluster screen right in front of you. So the maps are right in front of you instead of slightly off to the side. And you can have your media player running on the center screen and your maps right in front of you. So all that stuff works fine.
Good. That's good to hear. I mean, being somebody who is an Android, I never
like
know.
Tapping on the door so quietly, like trying to show me. I'm like, bring the coffee in.
So yeah, I mean, it's if you're considering one of these, it's worth trying it out, trying out the system, because even for a lot of iPhone users, use a lot of the Google services anyway. Some iPhone users use Apple Maps, some use Google Maps. Waze is also available on there in the Play Store. So if you're a Waze user, you can download, if you don't want to use Google Maps, you can download Waze and use that as an alternative for navigation if you prefer. So you've got a lot of options in there. And you can, of course, still connect your phone. You don't have to. So if there's a messaging app that is on your phone that is not available in the Play Store on the car, then you can still access that through Bluetooth.
Okay. Cool. Thank you for that. When you were talking about it, I'm like, I have questions.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, that's what we're here for, to answer questions. Definitely. All right. Speaking of CarPlay, let's stick with that for a minute. last week on the Decoder podcast, Nilay Patel, who's the editor-in-chief of The Verge, interviewed Ola Källenius, who's the CEO of Mercedes-Benz. And one of the topics that came up was CarPlay, the next generation CarPlay system, which Apple announced 2 years ago at their Worldwide Developers Conference. And this is a system that is designed to be not just on your center touchscreen, but to take over all of the displays in your car, the instrument cluster, if there's a passenger side display, all of this stuff. And they showed some renderings of various different configurations that are possible. One of the things about this, unlike Android Automotive, which is different from Android on your phone, I mean, it's based on the same code base, but it's actually running in your car rather than projecting from your phone. The CarPlay, even this next generation CarPlay, is still designed to project from your phone. So you have to have your phone connected to the car to project all this stuff onto all these screens. And Kalanius said that they are not going to support this next generation of CarPlay because essentially he said they don't want to let Apple take over all the screens. You know, they'll have the current CarPlay, which, you know, gives you that one window into, you know, the various apps that you can run from your phone. But, you know, Mercedes wants to retain control of the other screens of the instrument cluster and, you know, and have their look and feel to all of that.
Sam, have any other automakers, because I heard this one from Mercedes, but have anybody else said, yes, we're going to accept this or no, we're not definitively?
So far, only Porsche and Aston Martin have said they're going to use it.
So they've said yes, but none of the other car companies have said yes yet. See, right. My gut tells me that it's not just going to be Mercedes because I feel like handing all that over, like some of that, I think once upon a time, they all wanted their infotainment systems to be what everybody used and it was personalized and it was different. And then everyone's okay, we're all kind of using our smartphones to do this. But still, what makes it a GMC versus a Buick versus a Jeep versus a Toyota is a lot of the stuff around that, how things look and the graphics that they put up that are all fun. And like, you know, you get in some of them and now it's just like trees and rocks or whatever as you load. If you start handing all that over to Apple, then you remove some of the personality that makes any of that look like you're in a car that's just not any old car. I can see why you'd be reluctant to do that.
Well, and I think the other part of being the reluctance is, I mean, it's the same reason General Motors removed Apple CarPlay from its EVs. Mm-hmm. They want your data. Mm-hmm. They want you to subscribe to this thing, and they want to be in control of all of your information. And if Apple is taking control, Apple has control of your information, not Porsche, not Mercedes.
Well, to be fair, you know, the OEM still has they still have control of all that data. What they don't want to do is they don't want to share it with Apple. You know, I mean, because the thing is, you know, because it's a projection system, you know, the manufacturer still has to build their own system in there anyway. So what Apple's doing is they're overlaying on top of that. So the manufacturer, you know, they still know all the stuff that you're doing in the car. They know, you know, how fast you're driving, you know, how hard you're hitting the brakes, you know, when you're charging, where you're charging. They know all of this stuff because that's all native to the vehicle. So they still have all of that data. What they don't want is they don't want to share it with Apple. That's the difference.
What do you think that's going to mean? So like, I think and you're the tech guy. So now this is the Sam tells Nicole and Jill about tech stuff. because I think about things where like you have an old version of an iPhone, I don't know, an iPhone 5 or something, and you're loath to get rid of it because you like it for some reason. And there comes a point where whatever it is that people are running, even if it's the same app, it's no longer running the way you want it to on your phone because your phone is so old. Do we risk a point where whatever, if they don't do it, suddenly you can't get your phone to project properly onto things? Like, is it going to require them to do sort of like two separate updating systems? At some point, Apple's like, well, we're not supporting doing regular old boring CarPlay anymore. If you don't want to do it, that's your problem.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely true. One of the things that Apple has gotten a lot of credit for, justifiably, is they do maintain the software for their older devices generally a lot longer than many of the Android manufacturers have up until now. You know, usually you can get iOS updates for phones that are 5-6 years old. What tends to happen is, you know, you will, you know, you, if your phone is 5 years old, you will get the iOS update, you won't necessarily get all the features of that update based on what the hardware on the phone can support, because the phones change every year, the hardware changes, and you know they add new capabilities to the phones. So not all of the features will be supported, but you will get updates. And so that, you know, Apple has done really well with that. But there will come a point where, you know, if you're still running an iPhone 5, you know, I mean, if you like small phones, great. You know, because there's not really any small phones available yet.
And that's, I do know people that hold on to old iPhones.
That's absolutely true. You know, if you still like your old iPhone 5, chances are if you plug it into a car today, I'll have to try it. I've actually got a 5C sitting in the drawer. I'll have to charge it up and try it and see if it'll actually still work. But I think that, you know, at some point there will come a point where it will not work anymore and CarPlay will not work. You know, and that's, you know, one of the reasons why a lot of consumers have said, you know, I prefer to use the system, the projection from my phone than the car's system, is because they knew they were getting updates for multiple years. And the reality is most people are not using phones that old. You know, most people are upgrading their phones at least every 3 or 4 years. And so you are getting those updates, but there will come a point where you're not going to get those updates and it's not going to work in your car anymore. And so you have the choice, you know, do I buy a new phone? Yeah. Okay. And then you get all those new features, and it'll still work. On the automaker side, automakers know that cars are used far longer than any of our consumer electronics devices. You know, the average age of a car in the US is 12 and a half years old. You know, 20 and 30 year old cars are not uncommon. I have a 34 year old car in my garage.
Right. It's silver.
Yeah. And so I've talked to multiple automakers, you know, as they're trying to make these transitions, and they understand that, yes, we are going to have to change the way, you know, they're changing the way they do software. You know, in the past, you know, basically unless it was something that was so horribly bad, like my Ford Touch back in 2010, for the most part, you know, most infotainment systems did not really get updates very much over the life of the car. As they're doing these modern systems, they know they're going to have to maintain them and update them for many, many years. So it's going to be more like what we're used to with our phones. And so we'll see. I mean, you know, if they can maintain that pace of updates and upgrades over the life of the car, yeah, we'll come back to this question in 10 years.
Okay, let's make that a plan. May 5th, 2034.
In the 2000th episode of.
Okay, so, and one other thing that I have heard from a couple of manufacturers, you know, off the record about this next generation CarPlay, something I heard from somebody at GM. One of the reasons why GM decided to drop CarPlay support from their EVs, when they made that decision, Apple was still working on a car. Basically they decided, well, Apple is a potential competitor. We don't want to share that data with a potential competitor.
Which makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah. Apple's no longer working on a car. Will they change their attitude? I don't know. We'll see. I mean, you know, I think, you know, in a year or two from now, you know, once a bunch of these GM EVs are on the road and we see how consumers are responding to not having CarPlay, you know, GM, you know, could very well change, because the reality is the system, the hardware and the software that's running on the Blazer is exactly the same software, infotainment software, that's running on this Traverse.
So if you had to bet, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think consumers are going to really balk at this? Or do you think largely they're going to say, well, not thrilled with this plan, but I want the car?
I think, you know, some consumers will balk and they won't even consider buying a GM vehicle, a GM EV. But on the other hand, I think those that do will try the system and they'll say, yeah, it's fine. It works. It's reliable. It's responsive. It, that does what I need it to do. And, you know, I can still Bluetooth my phone, you know, to play Apple Music and get iMessages, and it works fine. So I think it won't be much of an issue. I took a very informal poll
of, because I was curious what kids, younger kids, like 20 somethings, young adults would think, who are much more like, I must have the tech that I like, or I don't want it. Asked a whole bunch of my daughter's friends who are in the 20 to 24 range. I said, if you would not being able to use Apple CarPlay on a car or Android Auto, if you had Android, like would that not having that make you not buy that car? And every single one of them was like, oh no, my next car has to, the first time I buy a new car, it has to have it. Every single one, it was like, I said, is that just kind of, it would be, you'd have to think twice or deal breaker? And all of them, deal breaker. I don't want it. There's plenty of cars out there that have it. So they were very, and I, so I'm wondering how generational that is, how age focused, like if somebody at a certain age group is like, I don't care. And that some people are like, I want it to be easy and convenient to have my phone plug in and boom, be there. And if it's not, then I'm not buying that car. So we'll have to, I'm curious. I'm really curious how it's going to roll out.
And we'll see, you know, certainly, you know, the whole attitudes have changed multiple times over the years.
Right.
10 years ago, nobody, CarPlay didn't exist.
Right.
You know, now everybody uses CarPlay and Android Auto.
Yeah. I mean, it's become such a thing. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't spent any quality time with General Motors EVs yet. I have a couple of things coming up where I'll really get to spend some good time. So for me as an Apple user, like I use voice to text on my phone while I'm driving all the time. I listen to podcasts while I'm driving all the time. And so I don't understand how that integration is going to work in a vehicle that doesn't have Apple Car. Am I going to have to pick up my phone and like scroll through the podcasts on my phone to get to the one that I want? Like I need to see how that is going to work for me to be able to say, hey, you don't need Apple CarPlay. Because right now, like, I don't understand how that's going to work. And I'm like, nope, if I don't have Apple CarPlay, whatever.
Actually, I think you'll be surprised at how well it does work. Because, you know, I got
it. Says the Android user.
Yeah. No. Well, I'm
just going to put that out there.
I also have a couple of iPhones in the drawer that I use for testing purposes.
Sam's like, hold on just 1 minute.
And, you know, as I said, you can connect your phone via Bluetooth to the car. And, you know, when you select, you know, you go in your media sources, you select Bluetooth, the Bluetooth device as your media source instead of, you know, the built-in, you know, one of the built-in apps. And, you know, what app do you use for playing podcasts? Do you use Apple Podcasts or Overcast?
Yeah, I use iTunes.
Okay. So, you know, you connect your phone via Bluetooth, you select your phone as the media source. And then the media player app will show up on the screen with pause and stop, and you know it'll list it'll show all your playlists and stuff.
But will it show your playlists and your podcasts
that's what I'm saying. It'll show whichever app you choose from your phone, that will show up.
So you have to touch your phone to select the app.
You guys, if you could see how this is playing, Sam is desperately trying to answer questions. Jill's like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sam is thinking, this is the last time we have Nicole and Jill on the show together ever.
if you were listening to podcasts, you know, before you got in the car and you get in the car, start it up, phone connects to the car over Bluetooth. That's what that will, Apple Podcasts will show up as your media source. And then you can control it. So, you know, whatever your list of podcasts that will show up on the screen. So you don't have to touch your phone. The only time you would have to touch your phone is if you wanted to change what app is the media source on your phone. So if you wanted to go from Apple Podcasts to Apple Music, for example,
right,
then you would have to, you know, tap Apple Music to launch Apple Music on your phone. That's the only time you would have to touch it. Same with messages, for iMessage, you know, that will just show up, you know, when you tap on messages, that'll show up, your list of messages will show up on the screen. I'll put a link to, when I did the Blazer drive in December, I did a demo. So there's a video on the Wheel Bearings YouTube channel, where I actually had, GM guy, show me how that all works. And so I'll include that link in the show notes for today's episode so you can see what that looks like.
Yeah, thank you. Because I mean, I've watched that.
No, it's a legitimate concern, you know, for iPhone users. GM has tried to mitigate that as much as possible. It may not be a perfect solution, but they've done what they can.
Okay. Still skeptical.
Yeah, no, and you should be. You should always be skeptical of all the claims that any manufacturer makes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're here for, is to be skeptical. all right, let's move on to some other stuff. We weren't speaking of it, but Ford BlueCruise. You know, we've talked about BlueCruise in the past. It's Ford's hands-free system, their equivalent of GM Super Cruise. And you know, I've been fairly critical of BlueCruise. You know, it overall works pretty well, but it's not as good as Super Cruise.
I agree.
Recently, there have been a couple of crashes involving BlueCruise use that were fatal. There were two fatal crashes earlier this year. And so the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has now launched an investigation into that. Just as they previously had investigations into Tesla Autopilot and full self-driving, and they're continuing to investigate those. But it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this. So far, you know, there have not been any fatal crashes that we know of that involved Super Cruise or other systems, but there was recently one in Texas, and I think another one in Virginia where BlueCruise was active, and they apparently
were they both the same, where it was a car stopped without lights on? Was it that same way? I only see that.
It appears that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they both occurred at night with the Fords colliding with stationary vehicles in the lane they were traveling in. So I don't know if the lights were on in the cars that they hit.
Do you know if it was the 1.0 or the 1.2 system?
Yeah, it doesn't say that.
It does not say. I'm guessing it was probably 1.2. I mean, the hardware is the same on all of them. And they've been doing the updates over the air. So I would hope that they have the latest updates, but maybe not. Maybe they don't. I don't know.
Because the 1.2 system to me is a lot better than the 1.0.
Yeah.
The 1.0 system was like bobbly between the lanes and not terribly steady. And, you know, 1.2 was a lot better, but, I did have problems when I was using BlueCruise where it tried to take me off on an exit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, no, wrong way.
I had problems with it too, where it had a really hard time seeing, but it was the older version. You know, it's not the newest iteration, but it would have a hard time seeing where the lanes were. So it would try to like, oh, you're drifting out of your lane. I'm like, well, now I am. Like put me back. So it was not, and I kept trying to figure out, like, there wasn't a glare, there wasn't water, it wasn't nighttime. It was just a nice, average, light afternoon that the lanes were perfectly obvious, nice little white dotted lines on either side of me, and it would get confused. So, but I feel like that's been taken care of from what I hear in more recent versions of it. So you do wonder what...
Yeah, it's definitely better. But you know, the 1.2 has been out long enough now that I would think that all of these vehicles should have been updated by now.
Yeah,
it's an OTA update, but we'll see when the results of the investigation come out.
But you know, because this is scary stuff when you hear that some of this autonomous technology is like, okay, what happened? Why did this guy rear end someone? But the things that I literally don't think we can all say it enough. These are not driving the car and letting you stop paying attention. These are not driving the car and letting you read a book, letting you zone out and watch out the window, letting you do something else. These are just letting you not have to physically drive, but you 100% have to be paying attention to what's happening in front of you. 100% be paying as much attention as if the stuff wasn't on. So if something does start to look wonky, you suddenly start seeing a vehicle coming up and you don't feel like you're about to stop, stop the car or somebody, it's so important. I don't know how, and I'm not blaming the person. It's almost like a public service announcement. These don't drive the car without you. They drive the car with you. And you have to pay attention when you're driving. And it's unfortunate that people don't. And I'm not saying that this would have stopped it, but certainly some of these, you know, when you see things about people who aren't paying attention and have accidents, like, but you still have to pay attention. This is an assist, not a replacement for the driver. And you got to be looking at the road, ready to take the wheel. It just makes things easier for you. It doesn't absolve you of being the driver.
And, you know, Blue Cruise does have, you know, like Super Cruise and a bunch of other systems, has infrared cameras that watch your face, you know, look at your head pose and your eye gaze, you know, to make sure you're watching the road. What they can't tell is, you know, I mean, you can be, your eyes can be looking straight ahead and you appear to be watching the road, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're attentive.
Right.
Yeah. So, you could be zoning out. People sleep with their eyes open. Yeah. Well,
it's that highway hypnosis and that zoning out. If you're really driving, if you have your hands on the wheel and you're forced to pay attention, I don't think there's nobody who's driven a car hasn't had that moment where you're like, oh my gosh, I kind of zoned out. Like I just drove 5 miles and I don't have a clear recollection of those, but you were in the car and you were there. Like I feel like people zone out more. Like it's even more tempting because you don't have the physical need to being connected to your car. Don't have your feet moving on the gas or brakes. You don't have your hands steering. So I think when we have that sort of highway hypnosis or the attention span sort of drifts away, it drifts further because there is no physical connection to the vehicle to remind you like, hey, pay attention. You're driving the car, snap out of it. I think people have to be really, really careful of that with self-driving, like super, super careful.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to Tesla. Last week, Tesla laid off somewhere north of 10% of their global staff, somewhere at least 14,000 people. This past week, Elon fired at least another 500 people from the supercharger team. Basically, apparently, the entire supercharger team.
Which is really good timing.
Yeah, just as other manufacturers are starting to use superchargers, you know, they're rolling out software updates to enable them to access superchargers. They laid off the whole supercharger team. And apparently, according to the information, the head of the supercharger team had pushed back during the original round of layoffs against Elon and said, you know, this is too many people to lose. We need more people than this. You know, we can't lay off this number of people from the team. But Elon said, okay, you're fired. And then he went and fired everybody else on the supercharger team. So they've already, you know, canceled a bunch of new installations, delayed others, you know, new superchargers. And this is not just the supercharger team, but the entire charging team that's also responsible for working with site hosts that want to put in destination chargers, which are, you know, AC chargers, a lot of these at hotels and other places. There's been a lot of reports from various locations that were planning to put in destination chargers, and now they can't get a hold of anybody at Tesla to figure out what's going on. It's not great.
I mean, it's a very Elon thing to do to make these like sweeping, I'm done with this, like kick it to the curb. I try to think in my head, okay, I was listening to some financial analysts who aren't car people, like not car guys, who weren't looking at the car guy point of view, like, hey, wait, we just made this move to accept the North American charging standard and Tesla's like, we're out. Some of them could come up with these little thin threads of how this could possibly make some financial sense for Tesla. And I'm not defending that, but I was literally listening. I'm like, what's the flip side? Like, what am I missing? Like, what is the smarter person? Nope, smarter people in the room couldn't come up with the reason either. It was this very thin sort of, maybe if you look at how much, you know, where the development is going, what they were trying to do and how they were like, boom, 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 let's build it out. Well, we don't need to do that anymore. Okay, so maybe you needed 1,000 people when you were building out and now you need 500 or whatever. Like, they can come up with these really tenuous stuff that it feels like the financial folks are all kind of just sitting there saying, well, let's see what the plan was. Right now, all we see is what he did. Is there a reason? And yeah, so it was, because sometimes it's interesting to listen to people who aren't car people talk about the industry, because we have a very focused perspective on it where it's like, okay, all these companies are going in on X. They're not anymore. Tesla's out. What does that mean? Well, sometimes there's money reasons that make sense. They had a really hard time coming up with money reasons that made sense for this one.
Yeah. to be fair, I don't think it, you know, I don't think anybody's actually going to, there's been some reports that some manufacturers are thinking about, okay, maybe we shouldn't change to the NACS connector. I don't think that's going to happen. I think everybody's going to continue to transition to using that connector because it's a better experience for customers using that connector. It's a lot easier to use. It's more reliable than the CCS connector. So, you know, even if they end up maybe not being able to access superchargers, I think they're still going to make the transition to the new connector. And the other charging companies are going to be replacing the cables, you know, retrofitting their chargers with new cables and connectors.
Well, and they're even talking like this week, there are a couple like Rivian's opening their network to everybody beyond Rivian. And one of the things our newer chargers are doing, they're going to be currently just this, I would say wrong, CCS, CSS. Yeah. I can't CCS, get my word right. Yeah. CCS. They're currently that, but they're going to have the adapter for NACS. So, okay. Then, you know, they're looking at Electrify America. They were doing this big thing about how they just celebrated their 6th anniversary. They were talking about all the things that they're going to do. And part of their strategy, same thing. We're upgrading chargers, especially old ones. We're installing new ones. And we're going to make this so people can use the NACS adapters at RC. So everybody's always already rolling out that way. And it doesn't necessarily make sense where it's like, okay, it's nice to have a standard. It's almost like, I don't care what it is. It's nice to have a standard that works for everyone. So instead of having all these different plugs, like I can plug in here, but I can't plug in there. It's like, okay, industry, you've made this decision regardless of what Tesla does. Let's just stay with this kind of connector. Cause like you said, Sam, it works better. So I would think it would be kind of a weird decision for anyone to backtrack. Frustration that the supercharger network is likely not going to get better. But like, what, you know, let's not go back to the mismatched that we had before.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing to keep in mind too, is that what, there are 7 automakers that combine together.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up.
The Ayana system.
How do you say it? Ayana?
I say Ayana. Maybe it's Ayana.
I'm not sure. I haven't heard anybody say it out loud. So I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think it's Ayana. I was talking to somebody from Kia and that's how they pronounced it. So
with Kia's pronunciation, if it's wrong, we're
going to go with it. Yeah. I'm going to go with it.
Okay.
What is it? Like 36,000?
At least 30,000 that they're planning to install over the next several years. And they want to have the first ones in the ground working before the end of this year.
Yeah. So that's coming. So, I mean, regardless of what Tesla does, like there's going to be more support. There's other companies that are buying into the NACS system. And, you know, this Ayana, which is supported by 7 of the automakers who decided to switch, you know, they are going to finally start putting their money where their mouth is and start creating actual charging networks.
Yeah. And, you know, I suspect that, you know, managers at Ayana and Electrify America and EVgo and everywhere else they've been pouring through LinkedIn this week, you know, searching for anybody that worked on the supercharger team and trying to recruit those folks.
I know. So I imagine that that director for the Tesla supercharger is not going to be out of work for very long.
No, definitely not. All right. One last item I wanted to bring up is this week. Let's see. We lost Nicole there. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration finalized a new regulation, which they've first proposed about a year and a half ago for automatic emergency braking. So most cars on the road today, most cars being built today have some form of automatic emergency braking. They voluntarily agreed to put that on back around starting around 2015, 2016, I think, and have it in place by 2022. The systems that are out there today are not terribly effective. They only work at speeds up to about 25 miles an hour. With this new regulation, by 2029, all new passenger cars, including SUVs and pickup trucks, will be required to have a new, much more capable automatic emergency braking system that is able to apply the brakes you know, when it detects anything, an imminent collision. It speeds up to 90 miles an hour and up to 45 miles an hour when a pedestrian has been detected, which should go a long way to making the roads safer, especially for pedestrians, because that's been the biggest area of growth. Let's see, Oh, Nicole just lost her internet. Working on it, so proceed, and hopefully I'll be back in a second. Okay. The biggest area of growth in fatalities and traffic fatalities has been pedestrians and cyclists. So hopefully, and Nicole says she just called IT. He's on it. That would
IKA her husband.
Yes, that would be Russ. this should help a lot. You know, one of the requirements is that the vehicles be able to stop and avoid contact with the vehicle in front of them at speeds up to 62 miles an hour. And they have to be able to detect pedestrians in both daylight and darkness. So I think, you know, what we're probably going to see over the next several years is manufacturers starting to incorporate infrared, you know, thermal imaging cameras in addition to the visible light cameras that they have today. And possibly even LIDAR and more advanced radars to enable this.
Well, I don't know if you follow the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety testing at all. But I wrote a couple of stories this week about this new rule, final rule from the NHTSA. And I was like looking at how the IIHS does its testing, and they have a new automatic emergency braking or front, you know, braking system test. And they test the vehicles at three speeds on motorcycles, on cars, passenger cars, and then on semi-trailers. And their speeds only go up to 47 miles per hour. So the fastest they are testing these vehicles is at 47 miles per hour. And the subset of vehicles that I was looking at were their small SUVs, and only the Subaru Forester 2024, not 2025, which is coming out, but the only the Subaru Forester was able to stop at 47 miles per hour and not hit anything. Every other vehicle like slowed down but didn't stop. And I think that there were four SUVs, like of this small SUV subset, that didn't stop at all and got poor ratings. And so when you think about it, we have 5 years and there's a lot of work to be done. And I have to think that, you know, IIHS probably next year coming up is going to make their tests a lot more stringent to fall in line with NHTSA to kind of help show that these systems are working or not working. But it's scary. Like if you have to be able to come to a complete stop from 62 miles per hour, and right now, only one in the small SUV subset was able to stop at 47 miles per hour. That's not good.
Well, manufacturers have been aware of this for some time, and you know they have been working on this, and they know what's going to be required to in order. She's back. They know what's going to be required to make this happen, to make this work. They know what sensors they're going to need to use. And so I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue. It is going to add a bit of cost to the vehicles, but this is an area where it's worthwhile to add some cost. Nicole, we're just talking about the new automatic emergency braking regulation that was finalized this week.
Okay. So everyone, my router decided it needed to take a nap, but I'm like, what's going on? So I had to.
Looking at the time, I know, Jill, you have a flight to go catch. So I want to be thoughtful of your time. I really appreciate you joining us today. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll definitely have to have you back again soon.
Absolutely.
No,
thank you so much. This was a lot of fun. As you can tell, I like to talk.
Well, that's why we invited you. It's not much fun having somebody on an audio podcast that doesn't like to talk. Not very helpful.
And you know, one of those people, you have someone here and you're like, oh, that you like. So what do you think about this? It's good. Could you elaborate just a skosh on that for us?
Yeah, it's like trying to put my husband on video. Like when he's not on video, he will talk about a sound system and he will wax poetic about how you can hear the person breathe and you can hear the notes and the violin and, you know, how beautiful it is. And then I'll like turn on the camera. I'm like, okay, so tell me what you think of this sound system. It's nice. I'm like, no! That is not what you just said.
Again, thank you, and we'll definitely have you back again soon. Before we finish it up, Nicole, I want to bring up one more topic. You wrote a story for CarBuzz I think this week, yes, about Fisker and what happens to Fisker. But there was also,
we got to be more specific because there's things happening to Fisker every 30 seconds.
That's true. there was a couple of other stories came out this week. Let's see. A Fisker Ocean was totaled by the insurance company because it got a door ding that they estimated the repair cost would be about $900, $910 to be specific. But, you know, there's this little issue of, well, there's no parts available. Yeah. And they can't actually fix it.
So the solution to that $910 door ding was?
Write it off.
Which was tens of thousands of dollars.
That included a broken door hinge. So it was a crease in the sheet metal and a broken hinge. And that, I think the hinge was the problem. The crease could have been fixed. The door hinge, not being able to get that, a little bit more of an issue.
Which is another one of those sort of side issues that you think about with Fisker as they're, I mean, they have not declared bankruptcy, but gosh almighty. It just does not seem positive for them at all. And the way, the second part of this that I see you have in the show notes is how they are on occasion getting things fixed is apparently they have something of a graveyard with prototypes and vehicles that weren't shipped. And Fisker's occasionally like, hey, Mike, you want to go out and see if you got a door hinge for the guy in Oklahoma?
It's kind of like going to your local pick and pull yard, you know, to find parts for old cars. You know, it's like, you know, oh yeah, okay, here's, you know, here's an old Malibu, you know, let's pull off that door handle or that mirror or whatever, you know, and Fisker is apparently doing that with their prototypes, just pulling parts off of them and shipping them to the service centers.
Ridiculous. And then I guess the part that was kind of nerve wracking about that is, and this is a report from employees supposedly about the sort of graveyard that the employees are calling it, but it is full of both prototypes and production vehicles. Not such a big deal. I wouldn't be that freaked out if they pulled a production hinge off of another production car. Okay. But if they pull it off a prototype car, it does make you a little bit nervous. And I don't know, you know, we have no Fisker person making a statement. Let's be clear. Don't get mad at us, Fisker. But this is what employees are saying. And it's like, well, there'll be a little, you know, because we've driven prototypes.
They're largely fine.
Right. Largely fine. Mostly fine. It's the part that's not mostly fine that would make me question, is that really a part we should be sourcing from a prototype? Shouldn't we be going with something approved and done and perfect?
Something that's been validated? Yeah. Hopefully they're only taking parts that are production representative.
There we go. And we talked about that. You really helped me out with a story that I wrote for Car Buzz about like what'll happen to your vehicle. You own a Fisker. Fisker goes tomorrow. What does that mean? And it doesn't mean your vehicle stops working. But we were talking about how the whole software-defined vehicle thing means at some point, even like we were talking about like old iPhones, at some point your vehicle is no longer getting updated. And without a software team to say, oh, we've discovered something we need to fix, that requires a software fix. Well, there's no software team to do that fix. So enjoy the brick in your driveway.
And
which is frightening. It's bad enough when your computer or your phone is bricked, but your car?
Well, especially if you've spent $60,000 or $70,000 on the car.
Yeah, right? I think it's not a cheap car.
This owner, in the one that was written off, they estimated they lost about $20,000 because the insurance company paid out $53,000. So, you know, and these first edition Oceans went for about $70,000. So
you lost a lot. Like, that's a lot of money to lose. Like, that's a stinker. I mean, Fisker is having tens of thousands of reservations that have been canceled over the weeks as the news keeps getting worse. And on one hand, you feel bad for the company, but also there's the very real knowledge. Yeah, but if you buy one and they're bankrupt, you are at some point, like realistically, at some point, you're going to be stuck. You're going to be stuck because the vehicle you have cannot be repaired because it's going to be some software. You know, if things break that you can go to a mechanic and have him fix the hinge and your insurance won't cover it, but you can just go pay to have it fixed. They can get parts that will do the job of other parts, but you can't create software that you have.
Hardware can be fabricated. Software is a little more challenging. And, you know, and one of the things that I talked to you about, you know, for your story, you know, is you know, there's a possibility, a slim possibility that, you know, what they could do is if, you know, if they go bankrupt and go out of business, you know, they could, you know, just post the source code for the software online somewhere, you know, open source it. But they probably can't, or they almost certainly can't do it with all of the software, because, you know, there's almost certainly a bunch of components of that software that came from various suppliers that Fisker does not own the intellectual property rights to. They don't have the rights to publish that software. You know, the stuff that they do own that they did themselves, they could publish that. And, you know, some enterprising developer wanted to go in there and fix some bugs, you know, they could potentially do that. But I think that there's also a very high risk with that, because a lot of this, you know, safety critical stuff. You know, it's one thing to go in, you know, and, you know, make changes, you know, to download the Android open source software and hack around with that and, you know, add some features, you know, fix some bugs, changes, and publish that and let somebody load it on their phone. But to do that on a car is a very different liability situation. And, you know, if the car crashes or something bad happens with software that you've modified, you could be on the hook for that. So I don't think anybody's actually going to want to do that, you know, except maybe like for their own car. You know, if there's a software developer that owns an Ocean and they want to play around with it, fine. But I think if there's, you know, I don't think it's something, I don't think if I were a software developer, I don't think I would be wanting to publish that anywhere. All right. We have again lost Nicole to the vagaries of her router. So we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week. Don't forget, you know, we've got shirts and stuff at shop.wheelbearings.media if you want to show your support for the show. And thanks to all our patrons for supporting us. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.